Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are. This week, we owe Mel Gibson an apology. Last week, we said that despite the accusations, he likely was not a domestic abuser. He's just a racist, anti-Semitic, drunken pig. Apparently, we were wrong. He is a domestic abuser and a racist, anti-Semitic, drunken pig. An investigation is taking place to see if members of Congress who were about to vote on financial reform legislation and held fundraisers for financial company lobbyists acted unethically. Nah. Senator Arlen Specter demonstrates why he'll soon be former Senator Specter. He says he was frustrated by Elena Kagan's non-answers to questions in her confirmation hearings. Would it be rude to remind him that he was the chief sponsor for the nomination of Clarence Thomas? Same-sex marriage has been made legal in Argentina. They follow Belgium, the Netherlands, and Spain. Spain and Argentina are heavily Catholic countries, but they don't let their religion get in the way of sensible laws. Hello, America? Lindsay Lohan has checked into a sober living facility. In Las Vegas, odds makers are trying to figure out how much of a long shot it would be that she's not evicted within a week. A study shows that women's body shape affects memory. At first, I thought this meant that the better the shape, the more likely they were to stick in men's memories, but that's not it. Apparently, depending on where fat deposits are, they release different chemicals that affect memory differently. Okay. Last month, a dog in Pennsylvania rescued itself, sort of. His owner took the dog for a ride to the market, and after the owner unloaded packages in the house, she forgot to get the pet. After a while, in 90-degree-plus temperatures, the dog kept honking the horn. Finally, the owner noticed and got the dog cooled down and inside. Now, there are actually people who believe that dogs aren't smarter than some people. Roy Rogers' dog, Bullet. Long dead, but kept good-looking by virtue of the skills of a taxidermist, sold at auction for $35,000. That is $35,000. The day after, Roger's horse, Trigger, sold for over $265,000. So in the future, it may be more of a matter of economic advice than an insult when someone tells you to get stuffed. The drug Qnexa, designed for weight loss, has been given a thumbs down by a federal advisory group. The vote was narrow, and the concerns were the side effects of the drug. Subjects reported such side effects as palpitations, anxiety, thoughts of suicide, and difficulty in concentrating at far higher rates than those who took the placebo. 4 heart attacks were reported among the roughly 2,280 subjects being treated with Qnexa, but none was reported among those taking the placebo. Also, one of the drug's components has been shown to cause birth defects. It was narrowly voted down. What would it take to get a substantial negative vote? Now, 2 off-duty employees of Six Flags of America were arrested, charged with attacking the park's mascot, Porky Pig. The individual inside the costume, a female employee of the park, was said to have suffered nothing more than headaches and a stiff neck. Nothing more. That's all, folks. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That would be me. All of that, news of the weird, and our guest, unrelated to news of the weird, author Larry Hancock, to talk about things other than assassinations. Now, if you've got a website and you're not blogging, you're missing the best thing you can do to get more business, more eyeballs to your website, and more dollars to your bottom lines. You can do it yourself for free, or you can have a professional writer do your blogging for under $100 a month. Go to jeffonblogging.blogspot.com and read all about it. Again, that's jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. As said, we have Larry Hancock coming up at 5 minutes before the hour. Now, if you're listening to us in archive edition, the time doesn't matter at all, but in about 30 minutes from now. Larry will be joining us. Larry has joined us numerous times before. For those of you who have listened before, you know that. And we've talked about his book, or books, I should say, on political assassinations. Tonight we're going to talk about politics, And we're both looking forward to it because we haven't done it before, and we have some differences and some similarities, and I think you might find it interesting, so stay with us. The Mel Gibson story grew a little more interesting because tapes have been released in which he is heard to act unkindly towards his ex-girlfriend, to put it mildly. Among other things, in the recordings, he tells her he has no money, and he says that she's deceived him because, among other things, she lied to him about not having breast implants. Fascinating. It's nice to know that they had a nice, deep, evolved relationship. The story about members of Congress, this is somewhat interesting. Today or yesterday, I don't remember which, I guess it was today, Congress passed a type of financial reform legislation designed to limit the excesses of bankers and Wall Street. The truth is that the legislation was watered down substantially so they could get some Republican votes, but they did in effect pass the reform legislation. And what occurred is that right prior to the vote, within days, a number of members of Congress had fundraisers to which they invited lobbyists for some of these same companies that were going to be regulated. And some of those who got contributions, of course, voted against the legislation. And that is now being looked into by the Ethics Committee, which has subpoenaed, or at least is requesting, copies of documents from the companies that have lobbied members of Congress and were present at that meal. By the way, you may be able to hear in the background our producer, Autumn Bushman, growling, which she frequently does during the show, which demonstrates that among our audience, she has really exquisite taste. Let's see what else we have. Same-sex marriage legal in Argentina. Argentina, as you know, is a heavily Catholic country, but they went ahead and have legislated gay marriage as legal there, as did Spain. Now, apparently, Spain has demonstrated what a non-macho country they are by winning the World Cup. So, apparently, having gay marriage has not affected them in that fashion. By the way, let me give out the phone number in case you want to join us now or after Larry joins us in about however long that is, 25 minutes. The phone number here is 347-994-3796. And you can join us and talk about, as the name of the show suggests, just about everything. There are a couple of exceptions. The only one I can think of off the top of my head is if you start quoting the Bible, you'll soon be off the air. But other than that, you're welcome to join us and talk about anything you'd like, politics, computers, technology, pretty much anything. And as said, we'll be more than happy to have you join us. I would like to, incidentally, thank those of you who have been joining us in recent weeks. A number of you may have listened to us after the interview we had with Morgan St. James, in as much as she did make mention of us in her column on examiner.com. So some of you may have joined us on our website, listening to us in archive edition, and hopefully you're either listening to us live now as a result of that, or you're listening to us again in archive edition. Speaking of which, if you would like to hear the past shows the same way you got here, blogtalkradio.com/Jeff-Bushman is also the way you can listen to past shows. Let's see. This study that was done that showed that women's body shape affected their memory. Apparently, if they were heavy in the hips, they had a better retention of memories than if they were heavy, I guess, in the stomach. The difference they described was pear-shaped and apple-shaped bodies. And apparently this only relates to women who are overweight. Women who are skinny or basically thin and, you know, just straight up and down, they weren't in the study. And I can understand why, because it's so much easier to find not just women, but people generally who are overweight than people who aren't. So, but in any event, what happens is that depending on where the fat deposits, as I mentioned before, the fat in the hips apparently sends out different chemicals to the brain than the fat deposits that are in the stomach, the belly. That makes zero sense to me, but there you go. And in the world of drugs, we mentioned Cunexa. There are two or three other obesity drugs that are in the process of making their way to market through testing. And Cunexa was the farthest one along. And it, by the way, could still be approved in spite of all of those side effects that I mentioned, and I'll go over some of those again. Heart attacks, palpitations, anxiety, and thoughts of suicide. Now, who wouldn't want to take a drug that would cause those things? In any event, they were the farthest along, and an advisory board narrowly voted against approval of that drug for public distribution. Now, what you should know is the advisory board's recommendations are usually taken by whatever agency they are advising. In this case, the agency they're advising is the Food and Drug Administration. But the agency is not required to adopt the findings of their advisory groups. And by the way, advisory groups are used a great deal in the federal government for almost everything. And usually these are people who are not just the average citizen off the street, but are typically people who have some level of expertise. In this, the case of the Food and Drug Administration, when you're talking about drugs, usually doctors and pharmacologists and the like. And they, as I said, narrowly defeated it. So the FDA could still approve the drug, although it is less likely now because of that advisory board finding that they will. But it's possible. The other thing we do each week besides news, for those of you who are new, is we often discuss the news of the weird. We get that from a website called newsoftheweird.blogspot.com. It's also available generally at newsoftheweird.com. And this is a website put up by Chuck Shepard, who does a column in a variety of newspapers. But each of those websites will give you some laughs. And very often, they report on stories that we can't or choose not to do here. Because they might offend somebody in terms of propriety. They're not particularly this week, but in many weeks, there are stories that because of their sexual innuendo or exuendo, we don't feel comfortable doing. So if that kind of story interests you, then go to the websites. Again, newsoftheweird.blogspot.com. But we can tell you a couple of stories that are from there that are perfectly family-oriented. Carlos Medina Bailon, age 30, jailed on a drug charge in El Paso, Texas, for those of you who think there may be another El Paso, cleverly escaped by hiding inside the jail's trash pickup, and he enjoyed about an hour's freedom or so until he was fatally buried in a landfill. There are some ways you just shouldn't escape. Sort of a public service occurred. In China, Shenyang, China, they set up a recreation room with furniture and knickknacks that shoppers who get angry can soothe themselves in. This is in a shopping mall. They can scream, beat things, throw things, break things. The only restriction is that they only allow women. I don't have any idea why. That's not a commentary on women versus men, as far as I'm concerned, but strange stuff. Apparently, some people get upset at the prices in the mall. Speaking of China, it also hit the news today that in the second quarter of this year, their annualized growth rate in terms of their economy slowed down and was only 10.3%. They had been at 11.9%. Now, if you're familiar with, or if you're not familiar with gross domestic product growth rates, in this country, if we have over 3% growth rate, is considered potentially inflationary and a sign of possible overheating in the economy. China went from 11.9 to 10.3, and there were some people who worried that they might be heading into the same recession that everybody else has had. Actually, China has had a lot of growth while everybody else was in recession. Part of this is because of a centrally managed economy, which is not a good thing, particularly. But they did manage to avoid the kind of terrible deep recession that most of the rest of the world has experienced. Getting back to a story from News of the Weird, the loser criminal of the week may be Brian Cluck. I didn't make up the name, and maybe in this case, name is destiny. But we thought that he might have, Brian might have certain relatives like Muck Cluck, Yuck Cluck, and Up Cluck. Any event, Brian, 34, was charged with peeping into windows and taking pictures of women naked. He pointed out that he couldn't be guilty because the camera he was carrying had no such photos on it. On the other hand, police found a list of women he had seen naked and a to-do list of others, including their showering times. This is, you know, that's terrible, of course. But I often wonder why it is that these people keep such meticulous records on their computers. You also find that these sickos who are child pornography patrons, I guess is the way to put it, keep all that stuff on their personal computer. And are they under the impression that cops will never look at that? That's how most of them get caught. As a matter of fact, in a number of communities across the country, some of the people who have been caught with child porn on their computers are cops. And you have to wonder if they are completely brain dead. I don't have any interest in child pornography or, frankly, pornography, period. But if you're going to do that sort of thing, guys, don't keep it on your hard drive. That's stupid. Okay? I know I won't have any effect on anybody, and frankly, the child pornography patrons, if they get caught, that doesn't bother me at all. But in terms of just keeping records of your criminal activity on a computer's hard drive, it's not the smartest thing in the world. Just a thought. Anyway, let me give out the number again. It's 347-994-3796. Larry is due to join us in about 7 or 8 minutes. Next week, we will be remote. We'll be in Laughlin, Nevada, and doing the show from there. And we will be having, as a guest, the lovely Alicia Bushman, who won't be in Laughlin with me, actually. And she and I are going to discuss, and your calls are welcome then as well, of course, we're going to discuss essentially being your own doctor in difficult economic times and how you can do that and why it, up to a certain level, would be a wise thing to learn about and do. So that's next week. This week, as said, we're going to be joined by Larry Hancock. Larry is the author of a couple of books on the Kennedy political assassination, and when last we spoke, was working on one on Martin Luther King. We'll talk to him about that briefly tonight in terms of the publishing schedule. But we're also going to be talking about politics, if you will, liberal versus blue dog. And if you feel like you're on one of those sides or the other, you're welcome to join in the discussion as well at 347-994-3796. For those of you who are in the Phoenix area, it's not up yet, so this may be premature. We'll be, and you can in some fashion get at it anywhere, we'll soon be writing a column online for examiner.com. And the subject will be internet radio, not necessarily this kind, but we'll be talking about different kinds of radio stations you can hear on the internet, obviously wherever you are with an internet connection. And as soon as that is up, we will report to you on it so that you can access it should you desire to do so. And that should be up, I believe, by the time we do next week's program. So it's not necessarily something you want to particularly watch out for, but but once it is up, we will tell you all about it. In the economy this week, the unemployment report that came out apparently was better than they were expecting. It was lousy, but better than they were expecting. And so the stock market went down, whether because of or in spite of the unemployment numbers, is hard to say. Excuse me. One of the problems with the stock market today was that Google's numbers came out less well than expected, so that could have had an effect too. During this last week, there was also a story that we didn't headline, but is somewhat interesting. they believe for the first time in 25 years that they're going to make a change in the medical criteria for Alzheimer's, for an Alzheimer's diagnosis. What they are apparently able to do, or believe they're going to be able to do shortly, is through MRIs, that is the super x-rays, if you will, magnetic resonance imaging, they're going to be able to tell whether the brain has the kind of plaque in it that is associated with later development of Alzheimer's. It traditionally has been a case where physicians have said that the only way you can tell someone has Alzheimer's is during the autopsy. Rather obviously, by then, it's a little late to try to do something. Well, they now believe that they can see the development of plaque and watch it, and they really can't do anything for it yet in terms of drugs, which is one of the reasons they aren't testing for it yet. They won't test you for an ailment unless they have a drug to treat it. And I had an experience with that, and if we have a minute, I'll tell you about it. But that's basically the attitude of most doctors. But once they have a drug that they can prescribe and have cost you and your insurance company or your government-provided insurance pay for it, then they'll do the test. But the theory is that if they can treat you with a drug and help prevent the further development of plaque, you're less likely to get Alzheimer's. That's the theory. But one of the things that this is going to do is once they have established these what are called biomarkers, then and they expect to be able to do that easily within the next year. The next thing that will happen as a result is that the number of cases of Alzheimer's will go up, because obviously the criteria will have changed. The same thing has happened with high cholesterol over the years and high blood pressure. A long time ago, several years ago, I was examined by a physician who told me about what my cholesterol levels were and so forth. And having done a little reading, I knew that a more serious, let me put it another way, an indicator that is actually a risk factor for heart disease, which cholesterol really has never been proven to be, specifically homocysteine and or C-reactive protein, was a better indicator. I asked if he had tested for that, and he said no, because we don't really have anything that we can do for you if your numbers are out of whack. Since then, they've developed the drug, and now they're testing for it. So that'll give you an idea. Now, I believe, if my technical prowess allows me to do it, that I can now bring on Larry Hancock. Larry, are you there?
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. You called in a little early, thankfully, and the reason you did that is because you heard me hemming and hawing and mentioning your name, right?
Yes. Psychically, yes.
Okay, which tells everybody you weren't listening to the show, you just called in.
well, actually, yes, that's true.
Yeah, well, that's all right.
Since we're talking politics, we'll have to be transparent, right?
That's right. We'll be the only ones, apparently. We reported on a story that you may have seen in the news today that they're now investigating a number of members of Congress who, right before, like within days of the vote on the financial reform legislation, decided to have fundraisers. And the only invitees were companies that were going to be affected by the financial reform legislation.
Surely
they were
not
collecting money from these folks. What's that?
Surely not. I can hardly believe that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things where everybody knows the corruption occurs, but you don't want to make it blatant if you're a member of Congress. It's just, it's what's the word I'm looking for? It's bad form.
Yeah, when people write articles, you want them to be writing about Congress in general, not your name.
That's right, especially when it's corruption in Congress in the same sentence. Well, before we go any further, let me just add, before we actually start talking about politics, which we promised to do, both to each other and to the audience, tell me what the status of your most recent book is.
We're in deep in edits. The third edition of Someone Would Have Talked is in the very final changes of edits and should be out next month. And the MLK book, is going to the editor this week. So
excellent.
Editors and I are really together at the moment.
Okay. And to keep an eye on the status of those books about the John Kennedy assassination, which is someone would have talked, and the MLK book, someone can go to the website, which is?
LarryHancock.com.
.com. There you go. And isn't there a hyphen in there?
There is a hyphen in there. That's true.
Okay.
I guess
Larry
I don't go on there enough. Yeah.
Okay. Or you start typing in the address and it takes care of the rest.
Well, yes, it does.
Okay, very good. So, what basically, you know, we started in about these congressional folks, and when you and I had communicated previously with regard to politics, I think one of the things we may agree on, Larry describes himself as a blue dog Democrat. I would call myself generally liberal with certain exceptions. In terms of the dogma, you know, liberals are supposed to be for certain things and against certain things, and I'm for most things that liberals are for and against things most liberals are supposed to be against, but there are certain exceptions like guns, for example. But Larry's described himself as a blue dog Democrat. First off, why don't we tell people, how would you define a blue dog Democrat?
I think it's almost like I had to be one because it was such an excellent phrase. the whole concept.
So the politics followed the title.
Yeah, you had to go with it. Now, the phrase comes from the fact that these were people in Congress who did not go with a strict party line. They did
mm-hmm.
do not believe in totally partisan politics, and generally speaking, the Blue Dog Democrats are more fiscally conservative, regardless mm-hmm. of feelings about, you know, social justice issues or whatever, but the point being is because they would not vote a strict party ticket, they were often left out of caucuses and often basically just said, you know, if you're not with us, you're against us, regardless of what you say you are, which is happening to a lot of Republicans these days, I gather.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. they're just kind of like a dog during winter. It's sort of like they can't stay in the house, and so they go outside and turn blue. Well, all these
yeah.
Democrats were just kind of left out of all the caucuses, and the only people they had to caucus with was each other.
Right. Well, actually, I don't think they were left out of the party caucus per se, but I think they felt left out because they really weren't part of the same doctrinal group, if you will.
Well, true. They could talk. No one would listen.
Okay. And so in terms of beliefs, you talked about fiscally conservative. We just talked about these corrupt congressional representatives and senators. I'm not sure, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think we might agree that tax policy is one of the reasons they are allowed to be corrupt, i.e., there is an income tax, and if there were no income tax, there would be less opportunity to give tax breaks, and therefore maybe we should do something else. Now, do you disagree with that?
No, I would agree with that. The system essentially allows you to treat people differently, which means
mm-hmm.
that you can be lobbied to treat people differently.
Right. Now, the way I have felt for years is that if you eliminated the income tax and went to a national sales tax, that you know, which would just be a matter of how much you spend will determine how much you pay in taxes, which seems perfectly legitimate to me, with, again, certain exceptions at the bottom of the economic ladder. But overall, if you did that, then you wouldn't be able to give tax breaks because tax breaks are all a result of income tax rates and income tax exemptions and all that. However, to be fair, to argue against my own idea, the thing that occurred today actually to some extent limits the value of that idea because this didn't have to do with taxes. This had to do with regulation.
Well, it does, but I think that's a different aspect of it. I really personally like the idea of taxing the consumption side because
mm-hmm.
to me that does two things. A, it really, people that feel that they have enough money to spend will pay automatically. People that
right.
don't won't. And
right.
those people that really have lots of money and really spend lots of money will essentially be taxed more without
sure.
being separated off in a bracket. They essentially are doing it themselves. If
yeah.
you tax the consumption side, then everybody has their own decision. The other thing is it rewards saving. I mean, one of our problems traditionally the last few decades has been saving enough. And so obviously a sales tax gives you another choice. If you save it, you actually don't get taxed. So it just seems to me like it addresses both sides of the equation.
Yeah, and by the way, you do get taxed on savings now, in the sense that when you are paid interest by a bank, which granted doesn't happen to a very large extent, that's
not
taxed.
Really. Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
The other
okay.
thing on the regulation, I think, I think that's where you have to separate off and really, yeah, it is, it exposes you, but you're going, anytime you regulate, you're going to be exposed. I just don't see how you can avoid that, because you're putting yourself in a position of establishing a reward structure, essentially, and
yeah,
people
well,
are smart
I think,
enough
I,
to understand that.
Yeah, I think if by exposing, you're talking about exposing yourself to possible corruption, in the sense that, okay, campaign contribution is a quid pro quo for less regulation. But the other component of no income tax, and in terms of just avoiding corruption, forgetting about all the other benefits that would accrue, is if you, and I don't know if you agree on this, obviously, but one way to overcome that problem is simply no campaign contributions, public financing of campaigns. Now, there has to be some, you know, ways to, you know, control that, because you don't want to spend the country into more red ink just for political campaigns. But if you had public financing, no contributions, therefore, and no income tax, I think you would help alleviate all of those problems.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And we have the media resources to do that now. I mean, technology, you don't have to whistle stop the country to get your message across.
Right.
You know, you can... The candidates can package their messages. The candidates can do question and answer. The candidate, you know, there are many, many ways to do campaigning without the immense money that's being spent these days. Now, of course, the people that are not going to like that whole approach are the media folks.
Sure.
But, yes, I agree with you. I just, it's, I just cannot see the founding fathers of the country accepting the idea that you have to be a multimillionaire spending your own money, or so tied to a party that you're receiving party funding to be a candidate. I just think they would, their minds would boggle about that concept.
Well, yeah, although to be fair, that's really a function of modernity. I don't think that the parties are necessarily an evil, and I don't know that you can effectively eliminate advertising. Again, you would have to have that paid for by government funds in order to avoid the corruption. But and you might in some fashion limit how much is spent, because it is government money. But and you do have problems with recent court decisions talking about freedom of speech based on how much money you spend. You know, but I those things are different issues, and there may be validity to what you're saying, but it doesn't really get affected by the thing we're talking about, which is public financing and no income tax.
Oh, I agree. The public financing for campaigning is essential. Mm-hmm. I don't see how we will get ourselves out of the fix that we're in without it. Because I mean, it's very clear now that both individuals and groups literally think and are demonstrating that they can buy elections by raising money. And from any stripe, and that's, you know, in any event, I think there would probably be a better alternative.
Yeah. Now, you know, there has long been a belief, and I want to get to some areas where we might disagree in a minute, but because it would be far more interesting. But but there has long been a belief that money is the be all and end all in elections. And the truth is, there are lots of times when the larger spender, not marginally, but significantly larger spender, loses. Right now in California, you've got two fairly interesting campaigns. You've got the senatorial campaign, which puts Barbara Boxer, who's a Democrat, against Carly Fiorina, the Republican. who the former deposed executive of HP, and you have Jerry Brown running for governor again against Meg Whitman, the former executive of eBay and former executive of Goldman Sachs, but that's another story. Anyway, and both the Republicans are spending a great deal of money, and I believe that Barbara Boxer is a trifle behind in the polls, and Jerry Brown and Meg Whitman are about even with each other, although Jerry Brown has spent like 3 cents. Now, again, the election is not until November, so lots of things could change. But it is not necessarily true that extreme spending is going to get someone an election.
No, but part of that has to do with track record, too. I mean, if you look at his name and his, you know, he has a lot of momentum and a lot of basically infrastructure and leverage that he can
call
and play. If he was a first-time candidate, I'm not sure that that would be as applicable.
Well, I agree with you. You're absolutely right. And as a matter of fact, putting it another way, if you and I are running against each other for an office, which one of us has more money to spend is going to make a big difference. Gigantic.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking about, right?
Yeah. But there are times when, in fact, the money does make a difference in a more conventional way, where you have an incumbent or someone who's well-known and someone else who has a lot of money, and the person who has a lot of money wins, largely by virtue of that. But you also have times, as I indicated, where money is not the final arbiter, if you will. So,
well, and it's also not it's not historically all been that way. If you go back, Lyndon Johnson was one of the first people who essentially created the leverage of a national Democratic campaign fund to channel money nationally rather than just fundraising within a given and to gain power that way. And to, you know, essentially use those campaign funds as leverage politically.
Sure.
So it hasn't always been.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, he was an expert at using the instruments of power.
Indeed.
Okay, well, let's talk about where you and other Blue Dogs don't agree with the general viewpoints of most Democrats.
Well, I think one of the... Most Democrats, as you describe for yourself, want to do lots of things. And it's Blue Dog Democrats want to do lots of things, too. But they also have the pessimistic side that says, we can only do what we can afford.
Mm-hmm.
And we really need to be driven by, we need to be driven by a budget. We need to be driven by pay-as-you-go. You know, we may want to do all sorts of good things, but if we don't have the money... We just can't do it, or we've got to figure out some more creative way to do it. We just can't.
Mm-hmm.
We just can't borrow to do it forever. And I think that's one of the things that separates them. Really, is the fiscal conservatism doesn't really get into what the party wants to do. So I think. That's one of the reasons sometimes, while they may endorse the whole platform, they would side with the Republicans on some issues by saying, you know, great idea, can't afford to do it, so we can't.
Okay. Now, would your view be that that is true, that is to say, no deficits, which I guess is where you're going, no deficit spending even in a time of recession?
No, I don't think in general I would say that. That's kind of like saying no deficit spending in a time of war. You know, there are unusual circumstances, and sometimes you do have to borrow for tomorrow. You know, there are.
Right.
You get into. I find it absolutely amazing that we have been essentially in a state of war for the better part of a decade, and haven't done any financial measures that would be different than business as usual. I keep thinking back to World War II and all of the special financial measures, and we seem to have gotten ourselves into a mode of, well, we can do anything we want to without anything special. And we did that to support major, you know, military commitments for years and years and years, and nobody really said much about it. And then suddenly we needed to do the stimulus, and everybody goes, oh, we got to worry about the we got to worry about the deficit and the borrowing. And I think the Blue Dog Democrats would have been worried about it all that time.
Which gets me to, you know, a point of departure, perhaps, because in my view, of course, like you said, there are times when you have to borrow, and I guess I would describe myself economically as a Keynesian, in the sense that when the economy is doing very poorly, you overspend, or not overspend, but you deficit spend, because it's a way of putting more money into the economy and therefore stimulating the economy and so on and so forth, much like what has been attempted and I think is working to some extent, and we can discuss that in a minute if you want. But the fact is, what you said is dead on, which is we've had, when we had World War II, there was a lot of deficit spending, and at first we were not taxed in order to pay for that. That didn't happen until the war kept going, and then there were some taxes added in, that is, tax rates and collections were higher. But at the beginning of the war, they couldn't do that because we were just really out of the Depression. But in this case, if you go back to our youth and Vietnam, they didn't raise taxes to pay for Vietnam. They borrowed money.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing's been true with regard to Iraq and Afghanistan. And I can tell you why they haven't taxed for that, in my mind. But what you've said is exactly right. They didn't add taxes for it, so we've been borrowing money to pay for it, and when Bush was president, that money was offline, off-budget items.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't really realized how much we were spending, and now it is, and so it makes everything look even worse than it is in terms of the economy, in terms of the deficit.
And I see so many people today scared that it suddenly became a major issue for them in the last 2 years. And they truly are frightened of the budget deficit. And I mean literally almost panic. Whereas before, it wasn't that much better before. And somehow it did not panic anybody. It just did. But I guess where I might vary is, the thing is, it's kind of like your own personal financial affairs. Normally, you try to keep yourself solvent, knowing that, you know, if you have to buy a car or you have to buy a house or whatever, you will do debt, but it will be for an exceptional item. The country, for the last, I don't even know how many years, 50 years, has been borrowing regardless. It really didn't matter whether it was something. And now we've gotten ourselves into, we've unleveraged ourselves, and I think that is the real concern of the fiscally conservative Democrats, is you start losing the power to borrow. Which
has not happened, but could theoretically.
Yeah, and that's kind of what worries us, I think, is that borrowing is not bad. It's just a tool like any other economic or business tool, but if you keep doing it, it's kind of like credit card debt. And all of a sudden, it's no longer a resource, it's an anchor.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, the truth is it's difficult to compare individual to government spending, or individual budgeting to government spending.
Certainly mine. Well, anyway.
Well, I'm not talking about magnitude. What I'm talking about is the fact that government does have the power to create money effectively by creating debt and selling bonds. You and I can't do that as a practical matter, or we'll be in jail. One of the things in terms of economics where I, you know, kind of share the concern of the fiscal conservatives is something that occurred that was in the news last week, which we mentioned on the show, which is China increased its purchasing of Japanese government bonds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at first, that doesn't seem like it's that big a deal. But as most people know, the biggest government purchaser of United States Treasury bonds is China.
Yep.
And their purchase of those bonds is what finances our debt. If they're starting to buy more of other countries, what is called sovereign debt, that could be a reason for concern.
Yeah, and I think, and it's just a pure investment decision, but I think it is a reason for concern. And I would, I think here's a place where I don't know if we diverge or not, but again, the things that the government can do that are different, obviously, you just related that, but and this is where I get confused, because obviously if you're doing it for stimulus purposes, if you're borrowing money to invest in things that are actually going to create jobs or create production and are going to grow your economic base, that seems a very sane thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, as even a fiscal conservative, it's kind of like being in a lending organization. If I can convince my lender that this money is going to actually make money, that's a great idea. But I think far too many times in recent years, that's not why we got ourselves into debt. We got ourselves in debt, and we didn't increase anything. As you said, during the Vietnam War, when we got into stagflation, the famous stagflation, sort of like we borrowed all this money, we're having a war, we're trying to do the Great Society, and overall our economic production has got not increased one iota.
Right. Well, actually, economic production did increase. The GDP went up on a fairly constant basis during the Vietnamese War, with a couple of dips. But that really isn't the point you're making. The point you're making is that we were borrowing to pay for something that essentially was not popular. So therefore, and that's the point I was going to make before, in terms of the Vietnam War, Iraq, Afghanistan, if one of the points Ronald Reagan used to make, when Ronald Reagan was governor of California, he actually opposed the withholding tax, the withholding payroll tax. The reason he did was he said taxes should hurt because, you know, if you pay it once a year, it hurts. And it hurts, and that's a good thing because then you know how much you're paying into the government. If it's withheld, you don't notice it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a practical matter, that's foolish because that hurts folks. But the fact is that if people had to pay taxes and know that they were paying more taxes because we were in Iraq or because we had been in Vietnam, those wars, which neither of which have been popular, would be even less popular.
Absolutely. And I do think the movements recently in both federal and state finances, where there are websites and you can do more tracking of where the money's being spent.
Right.
I think that is that's a good point. I hope more people actually look at them. What frightens me these days is people get emails from other people and believe that that's the truth rather than look into those matters themselves. Yeah, I think I was fascinated, just a general, and you're probably familiar with this, but in the last couple of general elections, I've been fascinated by this, basically it's a political quiz that you take, and you answer this set of questions, and, you know, your opinions and beliefs and so on and so forth, and you don't, in the end, it tells you which party that you selected. And it's fascinating how many people...
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. I haven't really looked at it, but yeah.
And I think that's somewhat the same thing. I think many people talk about this without looking at the real data or really considering what they're saying. I talk to many people who are far different than I am politically, but if I talk to them about concrete things, we agree.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah. No, as a matter of fact, what those I didn't know what you were talking about at first, but what those questions indicate when you get people to answer the questions is a lot of people who describe themselves as conservative actually have views that are fairly liberal.
Right,
example.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but liberal has become kind of a dirty word. So, you know, whatever word you use, whether it's liberal or progressive, people don't want to identify themselves as that. But their views are actually much more in line with that label. But what is it that the government is spending money on now that you can think of, if anything in specific, that you would think is a foolish expenditure and we shouldn't be doing?
And sometimes this gets into tactical matters, but I do certainly think, I don't see how in the world we can afford to build infrastructures in other countries. I just don't understand how we can afford to build infrastructures in Afghanistan or Iraq. I don't understand how we can do that. I don't know if you noticed the news item yesterday, just got a brief bit of coverage, and I could not understand why it didn't get more, that apparently we're shipping military supplies in through Pakistan in unguarded convoys, and five or six fighters are trashing, you know, $100 million of supplies in one raid. And we certainly can't afford to be doing that.
You're right. That's tactical and it's crazy.
Yeah.
Nobody can disagree with that.
It's easy to pick on. I really, again, as fiscally surveyed, I can see how the U.S. citizens can afford to support a lot of disaster and relief and recovery around the globe. There's got to be some limit to the extent that the federal government can afford to do that when we have crises like we have in the Gulf and, you know, our own domestic crises. I'm totally sympathetic to the rest of the world, but still, you've only got so much in terms of resource. So,
I think largely, yeah, go ahead.
I just say that's where you begin to tug at me. My own liberal, you know, things that I'd like to do versus what you can do.
Yeah, I certainly would agree with you on the stupidity of putting our supplies at risk with an unguarded convoy. That seems like an obvious bit of stupidity. A bit of stupidity that should be obvious to anyone. But the other thing, when you're talking about building infrastructure in a place like Afghanistan, I think the idea behind it does make some sense, in the sense that Afghanistan has to become a viable country at some point, or you create a non-existing government state where people like Al-Qaeda can again develop and operate from. And so creating the infrastructure helps create commerce in things hopefully other than poppies and opium, but nonetheless creates commerce so that people can live without depending on terrorist groups to protect them. I think that's the theory behind it anyway. How valid that is, obviously, I don't know.
Well, and that's where I'd come back and say the concept, obviously, I couldn't argue with concept. We need as many developed countries as we can get. I mean, it's pretty clear at this point in time. I think it's a matter of how you do it. Certainly, it seems to me that our experience in Iraq has proven that the federal government spending money with contractors is not a good model.
No question.
And it seems to me like we, from what I hear, we're following the same model in Afghanistan. Now, there are a lot of other models for growing infrastructure, and the term escapes me right at the moment. Of course, it would if I'm being doing an interview.
Sure.
Where the small seed money, the microeconomic ventures.
Micro-lending.
Okay. And those, there are other models to do this, and to some extent, even doing them in places that are unstable seems to make more sense to me, because if you build a really big thing and put a whole lot of money into it, it's a real great target. Whereas if you build a lot of little things, it's not so much the concept of doing it, it's how you do it. And we, in many of these cases, it seems like we're still going along with the same models that we had in Vietnam. You know, hire Brown and Root and build the universe.
Well, the only thing is, you know, when I said no question, I was agreeing with you about, you know, the model of having government contractors do things hasn't worked. I think it's, in rethinking that in the last couple of minutes, I'm not sure that is the wrong model. I think the problem is having a model where you are going to use contractors who come in with no competitive bidding, and they're chosen because they're cronies and friends of somebody in government. That's certainly an error, and that certainly hasn't worked. The effective alternative to hiring contractors is vastly increasing the size of your military.
Or hiring, again, the question is, do they have to be our contractors? One of the things I'll throw out is, and we talked about it earlier, the regulation. How many incidences have we seen in Iraq of where the Inspector General's office or number of regulatory or inspection groups have found these massive violations and the contractors are not even fined $5? I mean, nobody... We seem to have reached the stage where nobody ever suffers. Nobody ever really pays for doing anything wrong in that model. So that was part of my criticism of the model.
I agree with you.
You know, it's you can't have no bid contracts and no inspection and no enforcement.
Right.
All together is a disaster.
Yeah. No question about it. And the fact is that if you're talking about contracting with competitive bids and you have people coming in and, again, you do have inspection and review, that's a different story. Now you're at least creating a situation where someone has an incentive to do right. What we created in the last administration was an incentive to do wrong because they could go in there, charge a bunch of money, and not suffer any consequences if they were stealing, which effectively is what they were doing.
It's a stretch, and so I'll preface this, but I'm always fascinated with, in the last decade or so, with the number of financial audit firms who would do financial audits for these giant corporations, and the giant corporations would obviously be unsound, and it was nobody's fault. It's kind of like, okay, the auditor didn't catch it, the CEOs didn't catch it, nobody caught it. Everybody got paid. So.
Well, the problem is, and that's why what I thought you were going to say is about all of these financial audit firms that have gone out of business. But the problem is what you need is you need. I mean, this is just the kind of standard accounting and auditing process. You need someone who's doing an audit who's not being paid by the company they're auditing.
Right.
It seems obvious to you and me, but that's what's been going on for years. By the way, we're down to 2 minutes, believe it or not.
And another thing, you need to change your auditor periodically. Using the same one for 20 years isn't good either.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. So before we run out of time, when is it you're expecting the next edition of Someone Would Have Talked and or the Martin Luther King book to come out? When is that happening? Do you know?
Someone Would Have Talked, third edition, should definitely be out in print by either the end of August or very early September. So it's within a month, 2 months. The MLK book, which is Bringing Armageddon, is actually going to be on Amazon for pre-order. It's on Amazon right now for pre-order. Will be out in the first quarter. Right now, it's as the publisher mentioned to me, it's sort of like, Larry, we want to have it out in January. It just depends what the editor thinks about you, which
okay.
is a reasonable comment. Okay.
All right. So January for that, but August, September for the third edition of Someone Would Have Talked.
Right.
Okay, terrific. Well, we'll certainly have you back on then, if you will.
Oh, super.
So we can. Okay,
well,
so
it's
we
fun
talk
talking
about
politics. We didn't get, you know, we were all
too
over
much
the place.
Disagreement.
I'm sorry, what?
I said we didn't get too much disagreement.
Gosh, have to keep working on that, I guess.
That's right. That's right. But we'll do the August show and we'll talk about when. As a matter of fact, you may end up being conceivably my one-year anniversary guest because at the end of August we will have been doing the show for a year.
Oh, that would be neat.
Yeah. And of course, the first quarter of next year as well. But between those two, maybe we'll have another show like this when we can actually disagree on something and really, you know, beat each other up.
We'll have to work at it. Okay.
All right.
Well, by the way, I have guns, so we can't go there, you know.
Well, I don't oppose. As a matter of fact, I would like to talk to you one time. I'm sorry it was just brought up now. I would like to talk to you about guns because the truth of the matter is I believe you should have the right to have guns by reason of the 10th Amendment, not the 2nd. The Second Amendment, unless you believe that the founders created a phrase with meaningless words, doesn't, I don't think, give that right because of the first phrase in the amendment that says a well-regulated militia being necessary, or I don't remember what the exact wording is.
No, I'm with you. And actually, darn, we're going to have to work harder at this. It's because I keep telling people, I like all the parts of the Constitution, not just that second one.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway, we're out of time, Larry. Thank you very much. I'll let you go, and we'll talk soon by email at least.
Thanks again. Bye.
Thank you. Bye bye. And for the rest of you, thank you for joining us. Please join us next week, which will be the 22nd. Listen to us anytime on archive. Thank you for joining us. And next week, join us. Same bat time, same bat station. Take care. Bye-bye.